Welcome to the Culinary Mechanic Podcast. I'm your host, Simon Zaterka. Well, gosh, it's a beautiful sunny day here in Seattle. I got to tell you, I'm pretty excited. Spring is coming. But more than that, I've got an episode today that I'm so proud to bring you. Sometimes in the world, you meet people that are just fucking amazing. And I wasn't sure if when I reached out, if this guy was even going to respond. And to my delight and surprise, he responded within minutes, via email or messaging or something, and said yes. And I was like, okay. And then it took us a couple months to get it all figured out. But today I am delighted to tell you that we have Josh Sharkey from Mies. An amazing piece of software that is, and they are doing some incredible things with regards to recipes and restaurant management. And he's got the Mies podcast as well, where I can't stop listening. Like, I'm a fan, I'm not gonna lie. I hope that at some point I develop this podcast into something as well put together is that one. Super excited for you guys to hear this. And so, here we go. Josh, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for coming.
Awesome to be here, man. Awesome to be here and glad, glad to contribute.
Right on. We chefs, we need to stick together, right? It's all good stuff. That's right. I am not a big person when it comes to a lot of formality, so I'm just going to press on the gas and say, how'd you get into this industry? Like, what brought you in?
Yeah, I mean, it's quite a while now it's been. I think I started cooking in 96, 97, something like that, with my first job. But I think technically getting into the industry was more like 98, 99, because I was just sort of cooking in high school. But what ended up happening is my father passed away when I was 16. And I started cooking more at home, cooking dinners, because my mom, worked late, worked nights. She had to, support three kids, and we didn't have, a ton of money. So I would sort of, take care of dinners. And then I got really into cooking, more than just in the, in the restaurants I was working at. And I was a wrestler, and I ended up, I had scholarships to go to college for wrestling, and I ended up entering this contest for Johnson and Wales. Turns out they also have a really good wrestling team. And
who knew?
I didn't, that's for sure. So I ended up going to Johnson and Wales. I went from kind of cooking just because it was a job to going to culinary school. And then even then, I would say it didn't really click right away. I liked it. But then I entered another contest, another recipe contest. Sort of, it was very innocuous. I didn't know much about it, but a buddy of mine was like, hey, man, you should check this out. And it was this sort of multinational recipe contest with the Norwegian Seafood Export Council. And I entered. I had to come up with a recipe with salmon. I ended up getting to the finals, and they flew me to New York. And nice. I cooked for Chef Eric Repair and Marcus Samuelson and Rick Moonen and Rocco Despirito. I didn't know who they were at the time, thankfully.
I was 19. So daunting if you did.
So I was less nervous than I probably should have been. And then I ended up winning. So I got to travel through Norway with the chefs and a couple other food writers and the Norwegian seafood team through the Lofoten Islands in the north and all the way through to the south. And then ended up working this really incredible two Michelin star spot in Norway, in Oslo, called Oro, from this guy Terje Næss, who had just won the Bocuse d'Or the year before. And I fell in love right away. I was like, holy shit, this is... Can I cuss on here? It's
good. Okay. Yes, please.
I was just blown away. I mean, it was just pristine, and we're like, taking scallops out of the shell and, cleaning shallots from the bushels. And it was just, everything was, fresh every day and just very technical and just things I had never seen before. Induction woks and combi ovens. And, this was 99 still. So it was somewhat ahead of the curve. And it was just like, okay, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. And that's when I was like, okay, I'm going to be a chef. So worked there for a while in Norway, and then I came back to New York and then worked for a bunch of chefs before opening my own restaurants. I worked for, Rick Moonen and John George and Floyd Cardoz and Gray Kunz. Went back to Europe a little bit in between to work in Italy for a while. And then opened up some fast casual restaurants, which I would have never had assumed. What's interesting is, you know, every like 8 years or so, I'm doing something that I would have never assumed 8 years ago I would be doing. You know, when I started cooking professionally in kitchens, all I wanted to do was be the best chef in the world. And then somehow I find myself, you know, in 2009 opening a like a fast casual hot dog based restaurant. I'm like, what? I would have never assumed that. And so I ran that for 8 years or so, and then I was like running this restaurant group. I'm like, I kept being in places I would never think I would be, and I most certainly would never have assumed when I started cooking back then that I would have that I'd have a technology company, but here we are.
I love it. I'm gonna rewind the tape just a little bit and say that somehow, somewhere in the late 90s, I became infatuated with the food and the menus of Grey Coots. I remember that I was in Florida at the time, and my chef, gosh, he came back from New York City and he brought back, he's like, you like cool different menus that are like that are kind of different than everything else. And I said, yeah. He goes, check this out. He showed it, and it was from the St. Regis. And I was like, wow, look at that. And then, you know, I just started to go along. And then a few years later, he put out the Elements of Taste. And I was like, oh shit, I think I figured out like how I want to think about things, or how, you know. And so the opportunity to get to talk to somebody that's actually worked with them for a good long time is pretty special as well. So,
Yeah. Well, you know, last year, I had and he's a friend of mine, Gray's son Jimmy, on the show. We chat every once in a while. He lives in New York. But he brought with two of these pristine, you know, 6-inch deep binders full of every recipe from L'Espanasse, St. Regis. L'Espanasse, for anybody that doesn't know, is the restaurant that Gray Kunz ran in New York City for, you know, 4 stars in New York Times, just incredible, sort of groundbreaking restaurant. And we have two binders with every recipe and every menu that they've ever done, in my right behind me. And we're gonna digitize it. It's incredible. But yeah, he had a tremendous impact on my career, not just from a culinary standpoint, but in a lot of ways.
Well, I just wanted to highlight that because the guy just like I started fault like looking up menus on a regular basis and kind of seeing what was happening. And for me as a chef, just I don't know, something always resonated with the purity of ingredient that he possessed. So you know, I think that as we talk about like I love the I just jotted down every 8 years, it seems to almost reinvent itself, your career. Kind of special, right? I talked to somebody recently and they said, oh, a chef should do that every 5 years. Well, I just want to know, like, in the general world, like, how does this advice not get passed? Like, keep it reinventing yourself, chefs. And I'm hoping that that becomes a soundbite, right? But I guess to stay on track here, you know, like, all right, you won some contests, you got some great experiences, you got to work with some chefs. What propelled you forward into the industry? Because I feel like it's you can at any given point we as human beings could say, oh, I want to do something else, and clearly you got some skills, man. You know, like you're a smart individual, you can tell just by talking to you. So what kept you, like what really like what stuck you into the industry for you?
Yeah. I mean, I think we all can sort of relate to when you start getting into you know, into a kitchen, it's pretty, you know, addictive. And there's a competitive piece to it, there's a camaraderie to it, and there's this pursuit of excellence if you're in the right kitchens that is just kind of overtakes so much of you. And I didn't, to be honest with you, the years just passed. And I didn't even think about it because, you know, you have this notion of I want to be the best, I want to be the best, and you're around all these other people that have that same notion. And I think that's what, you know, that desire to pursue excellence just kind of, you know, it is what kept me going, because it was, I mean, as I'm sure you also know, these are not the easiest places to work at. But yeah, I mean, I loved it. I think there's a special thing about being a chef, that you get to go find these inanimate things and turn them into this, you know, creation that's partly yours, that you get to hand to somebody, and you get to use your brain and create something net new. There's something really addictive to that, like being at the Green Market and like thinking about what you can do with that turnip if you know, caramelize it a certain way, and what if you use this technique, and oh man, I could soak it in rice water, and it's just fun, right? And addictive. And so I think what it was a combination of just loving it a lot, and the pursuit of, you know, just wanting to be excellent. It's funny though, Simon. I feel like one thing that I do notice now, I mean, I'm 40, 42, almost 43. And you know, I started cooking when I was 17, 18, at least professionally. And I never once thought about like being a business owner or an entrepreneur, or learning about business or leadership or entrepreneurship or economics of a business. It was just never even part of the zeitgeist of like what we've talked about or thought about. And man, I wish I did. You know, I wish back then someone had told me, "Hey, learn this stuff. It's awesome that you're going so deep into becoming, you know, a great cook." But there's a lot of other stuff you can learn along the way. And yeah, I just never it's never even crossed my mind, like, you should open a business. It was just keep getting better at cooking, keep getting faster, keep getting more precise. And that was it, you know. And I don't know, maybe that's good, maybe that's not. I don't, but I have noticed when I'm looking back, like, it was never, I never once thought, oh, look, I wonder how this is going to equate to, you know, generating revenue in the business.
Man, you just kind of like touched right through my sternum there, poked me in the chest. I feel exactly the same way. I spent a lot of years cooking, 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 cooking. And it wasn't until I probably had 15 years in the business, and I worked for a company on the West Coast called the Patina Group. And I had a director of operations, and she was this surly woman who smoked a cigarette out of the left side of her mouth. And she'd come in, put down her bag, and say, "Come talk to me." And I'd go out the back door, and she'd light a cigarette, and she'd stick it right up here. One week she looked at me and she said, "Your labor cost looks great. How's your back?" And it never occurred to me that like she knew, like that was like the connecting of the dots, right? Like she took the way I felt and put it on a P&L all of a sudden. You know, and then it was that moment where I went, "Oh, I need, like, they're paying attention to the dollars that are happening to me. I need to pay attention to that too." And she also used to say, "How can you make your costs better if you don't know what they are?" You know, and so she used to kind of push us. And so for me, it was like, all right, I got to make money for the company. And then I got good at that. I got good at tracking. Turns out I actually understand spreadsheets and sort of like them. So I was the guy who my chefs would go, as a sous chef, my chefs would go, "Oh, you're good with this here. You track the money and like make sure that we don't fuck up." Okay, you know. But yeah, it's I wish that earlier on somebody had said, "Hey, you should probably do this." You know, it wasn't. It was even later on for me that like leadership became a thing. I went for a job, and the lady was like, "You're an amazing cook and you're probably a really hard worker, but I need a leader." And I thought, okay, you know, so yeah, I now talk to young fresh culinarians and say, "Hey man, like read a leadership book, like learn to manage your time, you know, learn that stuff, because God, it makes a, like, if I had that, if you had that, think of how much even farther perhaps you could have been." So
Yeah,
yeah,
you know,
it
I'm honestly a little conflicted with that though, because in one regard, Yes, I never once was, asked, how are you going to be a better leader? I never once was asked about, even food cost for the first 8 years of my career, 8, 9, 10 years maybe of my career and cooking in these restaurants. It was never even, I never once thought about it. It was just, how do I be a better cook? How do I get faster? How do I make my mise en place tighter? How do I get ready for my station earlier so I can go learn more things? Like, how do I allow my like get the ability to let them come let me come in early so I can learn bread or learn butchering? Like, that's all I ever thought about. And the pursuit was for how to make the best product possible, and that was it. And that's, I mean, it's carried on for me in terms of being an entrepreneur in good ways and bad, and that, like, I care about just building the best thing ever, like generating like X amount of revenue. Like, I kind of don't care about that, other than it's important for to have a sustainable business and be able to pay my team and to be able to build more things. But in some ways, I wonder if it's actually good for us to stay focused at the thing that we're doing at that time, in that time period. Because when you're a cook and you're just starting out, I want you to be an incredible cook, and I want you to know the importance of, being on time and getting your station set up, and you being accountable to yourself for, how tight is your mise en place. And I want you to be the one that says it's not good enough, it needs to be more. And I want you to be the one that's asking more questions and coming in early. And that's what you're thinking about. I don't need you to think about food cost percent today, technically, because I want you to be really good at that thing. And then you go to the next level where you actually do need to start thinking a little bit about that. And I wonder if it's actually more beneficial, because you're staying focused on the thing that you, that's right in front of you,
Right.
at hand. I didn't even know that I was really good at math and spreadsheets and technology, until like 10, 12 years into my career, because I just never did it. Then I started doing it. It's like, oh shit, I'm really good at this. Yeah, I don't know. I think there's pluses and minuses to both of them.
Well, I will throw this out into the world. Every time I see a James Beard nominee restaurant, every time I see a Food and Wine Best New Chef restaurant close, my heart sinks. 'Cause what the fuck, dude? We've all been to so many of those restaurants, right? Like, you eat in them and like the service is good and the food is good, and yet we're at 18 months. Goodbye, right? I mean,
Now
there's a
you're talking my language. That's why, I mean, honestly, Simon, that's why we exist. At least that's why we're here. And I'm the same way. It breaks my heart when I see someone who, by the way, is putting their blood, sweat, and tears into something, that is putting out a product that's impeccable, that the service is impeccable, and still it doesn't make it. And there's so much that that we can do to help. And again, that's why my company exists, is to really bridge that
Totally.
gap between creativity and profitability. Because guess what? If you're just really profitable and you have a cookie cutter thing and it's commoditized, cool, good for you. And if you're just, putting out incredible food, but you don't make any money, that's not going to work, right? You want both. And we become better as an industry when you can have both, when you have more and more businesses that are creative and profitable, and they're innovating and they're profitable. And I totally agree with you. It's such a bummer, when it's so sad when you see these restaurants that are incredible that just don't make it because of other factors. And I think that that's slowly going to start to change,
I hope so. I hope so. I think that some of it though is like is I'll throw the analogy in like this. I was talking to a guy and he's been cooking for, I don't know, 7, 8 years, and we're having coffee and he says, "Yeah, man, I think that my goal for the next 6 months is to be the," and he's a cook and he's right on the precipice of sous chef, right? He's really close. He was "My goal is to be the best cook in the kitchen." And I said, "I'm going to challenge that." And he goes, "Oh boy, what do you got?" And I said, "How about this? You work to be the third best cook in the kitchen and work to be the best teacher in the kitchen. Everything you learn, pass it on. Everything that's coming to you, pass it forward. Like, teach the people around you to be able to pass the information around so that, like, everybody's on the same page and everything's working. I said, because at the moment that they had that company or that restaurant has an opening for you to be sous chef, it's a no-brainer because your influence has been expanded and people listen to you already because you're teaching them. So if we work as an industry to pass more information, right? Like, I love meats because I can take the information and just go boom, here you go, you get all that information. But being able to pass the information and expand influence almost is more important than the individual skill. Like, I being a good skilled cook with great technique is fucking important, but also having a little bit more, I guess, vision of it all, of going, our industry is hurting, right? The depth of talent is shallow right now, for whatever reason. And so I think that it's really important that we look at that, kind of as we become the sort of the elder statesman of an industry now, right? We look back and go, hey guys, like, how do you affect the people around you to expand the influence, to expand the knowledge, so that when you go to another restaurant, they go, oh my God, wow, how'd you learn that? Oh, well, we teach each other, or we taught, or that chef was really adamant about, learning that and teaching that. So I don't know, that's my soapbox for the day, but it's really important to me. I think that, like, we all look around, because there's not everybody is as you are. Honestly, you are an exceptional example of somebody who's taken what they have as a chef and parlayed that into something else. But there's a lot of guys and gals out there who aren't taught. They're just focused on being a cook, and it doesn't take them farther, right? And so I think that it's broadening the base of education within restaurants. And that's why I say you got to teach somebody how to understand more than just the food, So anyway.
Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah, I'm a little torn as to how that plays out downstream in terms of the motivation behind what you're what, you know what why you do things. Because I think there's a real benefit to the pursuit of excellence, and it's not a static exercise. It's like when you have this pursuit of excellence, it can carry over to anything, right? So if you can be the best X, call it the best cook, the best, back waiter, the best sommelier, you can then take that same pursuit and to the next thing. Now, aspiration is different, right? Do you have the ambition to want to do more than just be that? And do you have the foresight to see that, hey, this isn't going to last forever. My body isn't going to let me be a cook for forever. So I'm going to need to learn more skills. But that pursuit of excellence is I think such a valuable skill that you build, a muscle that you build. And by the way, that can be it's I think it can be yes, and you can be, I want to be the best cook. I also want to be able to share my knowledge with everybody around me. And sometimes, by the way, I think sharing knowledge is just because you push yourself harder and harder, people are affected by that. And I think that's the beauty of when you work in a really amazing place, is every cook is out for blood in their own way. And every cook wants to be the best, and they're all hungry. And all that does is create new levels of the bar. Where like we just keep pushing, and you learn because, that's the environment that you're part of. To your point, yes, I do think that there is less talent pool than there is before. Although I think part of that is just because there's so many more restaurants. When I started cooking in the late 90s, early 2000s, you couldn't get a stage. Like you couldn't actually stage for free at a restaurant. It was a line to be able to go get a trail at La Bernardin or Danielle or something like that. And there wasn't a lot of options. Now there's a lot of options, and you know they and because of that they you know they have a lot more openings, and so there's far more demand than there is supply for the talent. But you know, I think what you're talking about is really, you know, what happens down the road, right? So let's just say you become a great cook, and then you become a sous chef. Okay, then what's the path here for you? Because you know, how long do you do that for? And then, you know, you're going to become a chef at some point, and then you're going to go to another place and be a chef, and then another place, and then, you know, maybe you're a corporate chef or you're executive chef of a couple places. But that's, you know, there's a lot of you know, effort to that, and I think that's you just have to know what you're getting into ahead of time.